This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, MS, RD, CDN, nutritionist, with a private practice located here in Manhattan at 330 West 58th Street. If you'd like to make an appointment with me, 212-779-1744, I work on a daily basis with Dr. Hoffman. We're at the same address. If you'd like to make an appointment with either of us, you may do so, 212-779-1744. Thank you for joining me on this weekly podcast where I get to weigh in on topics that matter to you, that matter to us as a people, as a population, health topics, wellness topics, diet, nutrition, medical conditions. If you have a topic that you'd like me to discuss or a question, you can send those questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And here we are, in the midst of the holidays. I hope you're having very special times with your loved ones. And I hope that you're eating well, taking good care of yourself, indulging when it's appropriate, because it is the holidays. And the very next day, we get right back on program. That's how it's done. Okay. So I've got a question from Catherine. Catherine writes, I typically follow a paleo Whole30 diet. Congratulations, that's an excellent diet. And I recently became pregnant. Is this type of diet safe for my pregnancy? What a terrific question. Okay. A paleolithic diet is very, very healthy. It's very similar to a Whole30 diet. Both diets eliminate all dairy, sugar, all grains, alcohol, obviously, and especially since you're pregnant, Catherine, abstinence from alcohol is a must. I don't care what they say in Europe. I would just stay away from alcohol. Staying away from all those, even staying away from legumes, beans, lentils, all of that, even some fermented foods. So, it really depends. Catherine, if you're already in very good health and you've been eating this way and you're having a healthy pregnancy, all things should be fine. Think about this from, you know, a prehistoric standpoint. Since the beginning of time, humans up until, what, 10,000 years ago, didn't really have grains or dairy, and certainly not sugary foods, with the exception of fruit. And fruits then were wild. They actually contained way less sugar than our fruits today, which have been hybridized actually to become somewhat sweeter. So, Catherine, first, I'm assuming you're under the care of an OBGYN, which is what should happen, that you're on a prenatal vitamin and mineral formula. Let's talk a little bit about the things to avoid. Now, some people who do a paleo Whole30 diet believe they're on a low-carb diet. A paleo Whole30 diet is not low-carb. It's not a ketogenic diet. And I don't want pregnant women on ketogenic diets. This is not the time to be losing weight. If you have diabetes, gestational diabetes, you have to be monitored closely on a moderate to low carbohydrate diet, but this needs to happen under supervision And supervision is not this podcast. That's with your doctor and your nutritionist who would be following you closely. So, a normal weight pregnant woman will gain anywhere from 10 to maybe 30 pounds. An overweight or obese woman may not need to gain as much. It may be more like 10 to 12, maybe 15 pounds, which happens in pregnancy. Blood volume becomes increased, the amniotic fluid, the growing fetus, all of that, of course, will cause weight to go up. So we don't want weight loss during pregnancy. And a paleo Whole30 diet is not a low-carb diet because they do include consumption of starchy vegetables, sweet potatoes, butternut squash, even white potatoes, all of those. So there's no restriction on starchy vegetables on a paleo or a Whole30 diet. You can eat them in abundance, as well as fruit. You can pretty much eat all the fruit you want. And that's certainly reasonable. You're getting plenty of antioxidants from all the produce you're eating. The things to avoid so that you stay safe during your pregnancy. Even the nitrate-free cold cuts, your nitrate-free ham or salami or turkey, have to be cooked. This is the rule for all pregnant women. Cold cuts need to be cooked. And the reason is, and Dr. Hoffman and I talked about this briefly during our podcast, that because another woman emailed us asking, are cold cuts and certain dairy unsafe to eat in pregnancy? Absolutely. So let me talk about that for a minute. All cold cuts must be cooked, put in a skillet and cooked. The reason is there is fear of listeria poisoning. Listeria can cause miscarriage. Raw dairy, unpasteurized imported dairy, has the danger possibly of listeria. Yes, but you can say that maybe you've got a dairy farmer that you know is reputable and clean and all that. It doesn't matter. You're pregnant and I want you to be safe. So I don't want you having any unpasteurized dairy during your pregnancy. There is a higher incidence of listeria in, for example, the Amish population, where raw dairy is pretty much a part of their diet. So, first and foremost, for my pregnant patients, clients, I always want you to be safe. No undercooked anything, no sushi. I even want you to avoid certain seafood that would be higher in mercury. So you want to be careful there. Catherine, the seafood absolutely to stay away from. Anything farm-raised, number one. Farm-raised salmon, even Scottish and Norwegian farm-raised salmon, has been shown to be more carcinogenic than any tainted fast food burger that you would get anywhere, okay? It's got to be wild Alaskan salmon, and it has to be fully cooked. No sushi, no sashimi. Stay away from high mercury seafoods such as swordfish, tuna, tilefish, king mackerel. There are certain others that are higher. Orange roughy. Go to gotmercury.org for a full list. That's gotmercury.org. Also go to Environmental Working Group's website. That's ewg.org. That might be ewg.com. It's slipping my mind for a moment. ewg.org or .com. Environmental Working Group. So no cold cuts, no raw dairy, no high mercury seafood, nothing undercooked. We never want any incidence of any kind of foodborne illness or anything like that, not just listeria, but anything at all. So if you're eating a burger, it must be thoroughly cooked. A steak you could eat medium or medium rare. Any bacteria on that fillet has been killed during cooking, but if you take that fillet and you put it through a meat grinder and grind that meat and make a burger, that bacteria is now throughout that burger, not just on the outside. So I don't want any pink on the in that burger while you're pregnant, Catherine. Make sure everything is thoroughly cooked. And again, I've seen women do quite well following a paleo Whole 30 diet, pregnancy, lactation, all of that. Calorie needs are a little higher during pregnancy. They're actually a little higher during nursing. During pregnancy, calorie needs may be 200 to 300 calories higher, daily calories higher during pregnancy, and as much as 500 during nursing, postpartum. And a lot of that nursing fat, especially around the lower body, the hips, thighs, the behind, will be burned off with nursing. I hope you're planning to nurse, Catherine. It's one of the best things you could do for your baby. So, is this type of diet safe for your pregnancy? It depends on the state of your health to begin with, if there's any other medical condition that needs to be addressed, or anything like that, if you are diabetic or not diabetic. So these are the questions, Catherine, and I hope you're under the care of an OBGYN, a nutritionist as well, taking a prenatal multivitamin. So best of luck to you. Thank you for your question. I wish you a healthy and happy pregnancy and birth. Here's an article that I just took off of Medscape. Vegetarianism is linked to depression. Male vegetarians are at greater risk for depression than their meat-eating counterparts, new research suggests. A National Institutes of Health study of more than 9,600 men showed that those who reported being vegetarians or vegans had significantly higher scores on a depression measuring scale than non-vegetarians. In addition, significantly more of the vegetarian slash vegan group had a score of greater than 10 on the measure, signifying mild to moderate depression. Nutritional deficiencies, for example, in cobalamin, which is vitamin B12, or iron, are possible explanations for these findings. Lead author Joseph Hiblin, MD, acting chief of the section on nutritional neurosciences at the NIH Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism Center, added that because red meat is rich in vitamin B12, that nutrient may have played a part in the results. If someone chooses to be vegetarian or chooses to eat less meat, they should follow guideline recommendations to ensure they have a good vitamin B12 status. These findings are published in the current issue of Journal of Affective Disorders. Adverse consequences. Although vegetarian diets have been linked to several health benefits, little is known about benefit or risk to mental health, note the investigators. Quote, vegetarian diets have been associated with decreased risk of cardiovascular death, obesity and diabetes, prompting questions as to whether potential benefits extend to mental health or, in contrast, whether diminished intakes of nutrients that are abundant in excluded foods cause adverse consequences to mental well-being, they write. Previous research has shown that low levels of vitamin B12 and folate are associated with an increased risk for depression. And one meta-analysis suggests that vitamin B12 intervention may prevent depressive symptoms in specialized populations, report the researchers. However, better designed trials are needed to delve into these issues. The population-based Avon longitudinal study of parents and children, ALSPAC, ALSPAC, is the acronym for this population-based study, enrolled 14,541 pregnant women who lived in the United Kingdom and whose expected delivery dates were between April 1991 and December 1992. Questionnaires were completed by the women and by 9,845 of their partners, and 9,668 of these men were included in the current analysis. The questionnaires asked for background information as well as information on diet. And because relatively few of the men self-reported being vegan, vegans and vegetarians were combined in one group. And that was about 3.6% of this cohort, or about 350 men. The men also completed the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale. That's the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, the EPDS. This is a depression scale between weeks 18 and 20 of their partner's gestation, of their partner's pregnancy. And a score of greater than 10 indicated a high probability of mild to moderate depression. The results showed that for the vegetarian slash vegan group, the mean EDPS score was 5.26 versus 4.18 for the non-vegetarian group. And although not significant, there was also a trend for an association between depressive symptoms and duration of vegetarianism. The investigators note that not all individuals who identify as vegetarians eat the same things, especially when it comes to fish, eggs, and dairy. Now, I know in my own practice what I've seen myself are vegetarian clients who come in and are complaining of depressive symptoms, and what we find out is they have unstable blood sugar. And once they reevaluate their vegetarianism and decide to put back some animal protein, especially having some at every meal with its inherent fat, helps to decrease these symptoms by simply helping to stabilize blood sugar again. It's hard to do when you're vegetarian, but especially vegan, because you're relying on so many carbohydrates, and all those carbohydrates can destabilize blood sugar. So, not surprisingly, the non-vegetarians in this analysis ate more meat, sausages, poultry, and whitefish than the vegetarian group. But 5.1% versus 51% versus 52% reported eating oily fish, and 23% versus 28% reported eating shellfish. Quote, to our knowledge, this is the first large epidemiological study to show a relationship between vegetarianism and significant depressive symptoms among adult men, write the researchers. Since exclusion of red meat primarily characterizes vegetarians, lower intakes of B12 merit consideration as a contributing factor to depression. With any patient who comes to our office complaining of depression or anxiety disorders or mood disorders, one of the first things we look at is B12 status. We also look not just at iron, if there's anemia present, but of low ferritin, that's the storage form of iron, which may bring on the same types of symptoms. So, of course, the researchers will also say that reverse causation cannot be ruled out. Dr. Hibeln said that more studies, especially randomized control trials, are definitely needed. And you know what? Every scientist says that. He also keeps their grant money rolling in. So, but he is optimistic about the future. He reported that the first conference on the International Society for Nutritional Psychiatry Research, which was held this summer, drew more than 500 attendees. Quote, it is my opinion that after the many years I've been working in this area, it's really coming together and being recognized as a field. So, consistent findings with caveats. Commenting on these findings is Dr. Felice Jacka, PhD, director of the Food and Mood Center at Deakin University in Geelong, Australia. So, said that this ALSPAC study is possibly the best cohort study in the world, certainly one of the best, and that this new study is really good. Dr. Jacka says, the important caveat is that we don't know whether it's cause and effect for vegetarianism because a vegetarian diet may be associated with personality factors or other factors that may increase depression. That's a caveat with any observational study. Correlation does not necessarily mean causation, she said. That is absolutely true. I concur. However, she says, the findings are consistent with the previous literature, including a study we published back in 2012. That study assessed red meat consumption among more than 1,000 Australian women. We found a very clear U-shaped relationship between the self-reported intake of red meat and clinical depressive and anxiety disorders, and that was excluding vegetarians deliberately, she says. Taking into account the overall quality of people's diets, those who had low intake, less than in the national recommendations, and those with high red meat intake were twice as likely to have a major depressive disorder or a diagnosed anxiety disorder, she reported. This is very interesting. She added that the way the meat industry is conducted in Australia and probably in the UK is different from the way it's conducted in the United States. It's a pretty healthy way where it's predominantly grass-fed as opposed to feedlots. Yeah, that's true. Dr. Jacka noted that she grew up as a vegetarian, but that changed with the research. I noticed growing up that I was probably very deficient in iron, and I was constantly falling asleep in class. That will happen when you're iron deficient. Fatigue is a huge symptom. So, and red meat is actually important for zinc and iron. But I think that we have the caveat, she says, that more isn't necessarily better. It might be about small quantities of good quality meat, and that larger accounts might be detrimental. She added that blanket statements cannot be made. Quote, people seem to metabolize and respond to food quite differently based on their gut microbiome. And that's something we're increasingly interested in and doing research on, said Dr. Jacka. As we move towards making individual recommendations, I think we're going to get much more granularity in the data. So, this is very interesting information. Again, association does not mean causality, right? And we always have to take that into account. And in my own practice, again, I've seen vegetarianism linked at the very least to these mood disorders such as depression and anxiety. And once we correct the nutrient deficiencies and the blood sugar, things get a whole lot better. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.